Welcome to Occult of Personality at occultofpersonality.net. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Occult of Personality, esoteric podcast extraordinaire. I'm your host, Greg Kaminsky, and you can find the show's website at occultofpersonality.net, featuring an extensive archive of recorded interviews. Occult of Personality podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and by the subscribers to the Occult of Personality membership section. This episode is sponsored by donations from Micah and Steve as well. Thanks again. This episode is also brought to you by The Lifted Lance. The Lifted Lance is the official journal of Knights Templar Oasis, OTO. The Winter Solstice edition is now available, featuring original artwork, poetry, prose, reviews, and an excellent research paper on heretic priest and Gnostic saint Miguel de Molinos by Frater Acadua. It's a true celebration of Thelema and the season. Obtain your copy of The Lifted Lance. Email info@knightstemplar-oto.org for details. Now, in episode number 138, our guest is Frater Ashan Shashan, FNF. His website, called A Magician's Workings, can be accessed at bryanashan.blogspot.com. That's bryanashen.blogspot.com. Frater Ashan is a ceremonial magician and a purist in the art who endeavors to recreate the workings found in traditional grimoires as closely as possible. His book, Gateways Through Stone and Circle, published by Nephilim Press, details his reproduction of Trithemius of Spanheim's The Art of Drawing Spirits into Crystals to great success. His book is a boon to traditional ceremonial magicians, providing a detailed account of Frater Ashan's work, including the spectacular Holy Table and an angelic encounter. Gateways Through Stone and Circle is a fine publication and a treasure as a primary source document that describes the process and result of the modern practice of traditional ceremonial magic. Frater Ashan deserves a lot of credit for being the one who brought this particular method into the light by sharing his experience in the book, which goes into meticulous detail about the preparation of the equipment for the ritual, and this is its greatest strength, in my opinion. Additionally, Frater Ashan's personal account of the Archangel Cassiel is captivating reading. For those interested in the subject, Gateways Through Stone and Circle is a must-have and highly recommended. Frater Ashan, I want to welcome you to Occult of Personality podcast. It's really a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to speak with you primarily because of your book that's been published by Nephilim Press, entitled Gateways Through Stone and Circle, which is really a fabulous book. I know it's getting a lot of great press and good reviews from the magical community. It's really a phenomenal book, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you about it. But before we begin talking about the book, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background in esotericism, and how you progressed along this path.
Well, often I've been sharing with more people that my interest in magic and learning more about spirituality and also various religions began when I was quite young. I had quite a few spiritual kind of interesting encounters when I was growing up, and they only intensified as I went into my teen years, and they were experiences that not only I was having, but my family and then a couple of my friends who spent a lot of time around me would experience things as well. And it came out of a fascination, but also a kind of a need to learn how to protect myself, to better understand what all of this stuff was about. And I wasn't getting answers from people who I would talk to or religious officials. So that kind of began my quest into learning about spirituality, learning about the so-called supernatural and magical world and these type of things. And I had a big interest for a long time in Celtic mythology and magic and lore, and went from there into Western Hermeticism and ceremonial magic. And that's been my passion for quite a many number of years since before I came into my 20s. And I've just been steadily going through that. And basically my biggest passions over the last at least 14 years has been grimoire, traditional magic. I did a little bit of learning and background into the Golden Dawn and other magical lodges and societies, but I really wanted to go into these historic magical books and see if I could make the rituals work. I was really excited. I got very passionate about the Goetia, like a lot of magicians do, and people researching that area do, to see if they can make something happen. But I wanted to see if I could make it work according to the text and really follow the grimoires closely to see if what they claimed, you know, was an accurate experiment of, you know, magic to make something happen, to make these spirits appear. I wanted to see if I could do that and be successful at it. So that's kind of where I came about this.
Did you have an initial hypothesis about this before you began experimenting with the grimoires?
I did. I began with just some of the, even from the lodge magic, I began with some of the banishing rituals and those rituals. I was like, okay, they, you know, the books I was reading, like Modern Magic and everything, you know, began to start with these, and, you know, these are supposed to help along your path. And I was serious, so I was like, okay, I'll do this. And I was practicing them, and I did get some benefit. You know, I could really sense a change in the atmosphere, a change in myself. So, you know, I went from there. And then when I finally got into Goetia, I went about, my first two experiments were very modified. And I was just excited to see if I can make something happen. And I came about it with maybe a different background than some people. I had already experienced spirits, and I knew they were real. I knew that world was, it was pretty much alive in my life for a long time. So it wasn't, I didn't have any disbelief issues or anything like that. And I've seen them before. So I knew that I could do it again. So, in the modified experiments, something happened and the spirits, you know, I could see them, but the communication was not there that the grimoire talked about, you know, having them perform tasks and really learning knowledge like a two-way conversation. And all I saw was this kind of ghostly phenomenon at first. You know, I would ask for something and then it would be gone, and it was very brief. So I knew that something was there and that it worked. So it just kind of encouraged me to go, well, there's got to be even a better way to do this. And, you know, maybe if I actually do what the book says, you know, maybe I'll get better results than kind of this, you know, halfway spooky feeling and, okay, the spirits exist, but I didn't really get the two-way conversation that I was hoping for. Mm.
Now, did you have any kind of instruction or teacher in the Solomonic magic, or were you self-taught?
self-taught as far as the Solomonic magic goes, and the only people I can really give credit to as far as you know, helping understanding along are some of the, you know, the better modern writers out there, like Stephen Skinner and Joseph Peterson and, you know, David Rankine, and definitely Aaron Leach too with one of his modern books. I was doing everything was self-taught, so I had to read, I had to research, and being able to bounce my intellect off of their excellent research and kind of getting a fuller view as the grimoires have been better researched and they're coming together and we're getting more information and clearer information, it's definitely made things easier for me. Like, I'm dedicated, but these other modern works and printings have definitely helped me be able to you know, formulate my experiments and my structure a lot better to in understanding exactly how these work. Besides reading and the only personal, I guess, instruction I can account for, not directly into the grimoires or Solomonic magic, but has been the rabbi I studied under for the last 4 or 5 years, and he teaches Kabbalah, and definitely that instruction and going to his, you know, his small personal classes has helped me understand, you know, Hebrew and Hebrew magic and how that relates, and, you know, how the Old Testament and the Torah and everything fits together and the Kabbalah. So that definitely assisted with, I think, being able to do this kind of magic a lot more proficiently.
That's interesting. Now, just as an aside, was the rabbi aware of your other pursuits?
He was. He would sometimes tease me. I was pretty honest with him. I wanted to be upfront and, you know, tell him I'm a hermetic magician. This is what I do, and this is where I come to my interest about the Kabbalah. And you know, he would have some remarks, but he was open. And then during the discussions, it was helpful because he's very knowledgeable, and he would make references that he knew of when talking about the Kabbalah, you know, even the tarot and other things, and give me extra information that he knew I would be interested in. So I think you know, he's been very surprisingly open that way in accepting, which has been nice and helpful.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, in the, I think it's in the introduction to your book, you mention also Rufus Opus, and I'm just wondering if you might say a few words about him.
Yes, Rufus is one of the first hermetic magicians that I came in contact with. I don't remember if it was through email or the Solomonic list, but he may have initiated the correspondence, but he's been an excellent magician and kind of almost co-worker in the field to be able to speak with, and he's had a lot more experience dealing with the public. I was doing everything privately for the longest time and not really corresponding with anyone. And then after meeting Aaron Leach online and then talking to Rufus Opus and then getting to know his material, and granted, for sure, Gateways Through Stone and Circle was inspired, and I probably wouldn't have done the magical rituals anyways to begin with, if not for his Planetary Gateways series. He had written that previously, and even before the Gentlemen of Jupiter was formed, he kind of had a whole structured outline of the drawing spirits and the crystals magic that he had done, which is basically the Trithemius experiment in his own way. I mean, he kind of took the outline and he does his own format and magic to it. And it was very inspiring. I was like, oh, this is great. And I started getting into that, reading his material and trying a few, you know, experiments like that. And then just like before, I was like, wow, there's something here. So let me go to the source and in the Magus. And even though I knew the Magus was, you know, basically a bootlegged copy of a lot of information from Agrippa, you know, it really caught my eye. I'm like, well, here's a very simple, as far as ceremonial, Western ceremonial magic goes, it's very simple and straightforward. It's not you know, the materials are a little complex, but not ridiculous like you would find in the Key of Solomon or the La Mega tent. I mean, they're pretty simple to make, and especially the whole rituals is very simple and straightforward. So it's like, let me try this one. Let's see if I can get this one to work. And it started out with, I thought I'd try the experiments, and if I was successful, I'd just share my experience and what I had done with the gentleman for Jupiter, because that's pretty much what it was for, is working with the planetary intelligences and the angels through this method. And I thought I could just share that, but it kind of blew up, and I had some of the most amazing experiences ever, and the tools, everything kind of fell into place, and it was just kind of a whirlwind of magical working where everything just really seemed to work very well and fall into place. And I just had, you know, the best time going through these experiments. So I would write everything down after I experimented, and I was writing down how I was making the tools and everything else already. And as people kind of read over it, they were suggesting, wow, this is neat. You should turn this into a book, something publishable. And I just kind of went through it that way. I was like, okay, well, I hadn't considered, you know, publishing a book, but let's see if we can do it this way. So that's kind of where it progressed from Rufus Opus's work. And he's been very supportive and just a great asset in my own magical learning and bouncing ideas off him.
You mentioned the Gentleman of Jupiter, and I'm just wondering if you could say a few more words about that, and in addition, maybe address the Jovian or Jupiterian spirits and intelligences and angels that this book and your work is primarily geared towards working with.
Sure, definitely. The Gentleman for Jupiter was formed not long after I just began. I think I started my blog maybe just months before, very recently. I was just now deciding to start sharing this with other people, see if they could, you know, benefit from my work, or, you know, I've learned a lot more to people bouncing ideas. Well, have you tried this? Or, you know, oh, that's interesting, I've done this. So I was enjoying reaching out, which before I was almost against, but it started to be a benefit to my magical work. And then Rufus Opus, I believe, was the one who invited me in. The Gentleman for Jupiter was just forming, and I started meeting, corresponding, at least over email and Facebook and other mediums, some other just great magicians. And the more I talked to them and read up on what they had done and the kind of people that they were, it was really, you know, strong. I was like, okay, yeah, I wasn't really a part of, you know, I've been a solitary practicing magician, but, you know, this kind of correspondence, I can do this. This is kind of a neat way for us to help each other out and share experiences, since we're going to be doing the same kind of work and really form kind of a network of intentional energy, and not only within us, but seeing if we can, you know, manifest that in the greater world. So RO invited me in, and we were just kind of brainstorming ideas, how do we want to do this, how's the group going to run, you know, what are our goals and this kind of thing. And like a lot of things in magic, just like the book and the experiments themselves, things just started happening. I mean, I was like, okay, this is interesting, but I think I was in the shower, and then I had this revelation about, oh, the Gentleman for Jupiter symbol and seal could, you know, look like this, and it just kind of popped in my head. So I got all excited, drew that, you know, drew a little rough sketch, sent that to everybody, and they seemed to like that, and they're like, oh, cool. And then from there on, a lot of the Jovian currents, you know, I don't know if it's so much with my birth sign, and there are a lot of things just kind of lined up where we were doing Thursday rituals and really trying to get in touch with this energy of Jupiter and what that means, and the associated archangel. And then, of course, when I was doing the experiments that I describe in my book, coming face to face with with Zadkiel and Satchiel, this archangel of Jupiter, and the whole energy. There's so much learning in just being in their presence. Just, you know, powerful but relaxed and just so regal and really inspiring that in yourself. And I felt great and felt like I had more control over not just my life, but you know, making my life really what I wanted to, and being successful in multiple areas, and it just magically and professionally and personally, everything just seemed to continually get better. Even if there were challenges, I was able to look at the challenges differently. It was something that I could handle. It was something that, okay, I can work towards this, and I can make it better than it was before. This isn't going to, you know, knock me off, you know, where I want to achieve, or, you know, knock me from my goals. Mm-hmm. And so it's been an ongoing thing where we tap into this energy at least once a week, if not more, and hearing other people's success and the support that comes around in the gentleman for Jupiter has been just a phenomenal working. So it's been, you know, more than just kind of a, you know, exclusive, you know, supreme magicians, you know, gentlemen group, so to speak. We have women as well, but the work that people are doing is what's making it worth it, and it's just neat to be able to share and see that with other people.
Your book, Gateways Through Stone and Circle, is quite excellent. I have to say, I don't think I've seen another text quite like this. The book is essentially a how-to manual for doing this type of working. I think the level of detail you put into it with the drawings, your personal observations, the construction of the tools, it's really excellent. And I have to say, it really makes grimoire magic, well, at least in this particular drawing spirits into crystals operation, it makes it very approachable. And for those who have the patience and the funds, very accessible, I think.
Definitely. And then part of my excitement for writing the book, and I think what ultimately, besides everything else, what ultimately made me decide to go through with it, to share, to really, you know, make, you know, some of my magical workings public, which is a very, very important and personal thing for me. I mean, the goal has been to experience and to do the work. I mean, it's self-supporting, but I came in contact with someone who decided to replicate these experiments and already is having, you know, some really incredible experiences and experiencing these angels too. And that's my excitement for the book, is that, yeah, there's some work involved, and you know, to do any traditional grimoire magic, it's definitely an undertaking. But the benefits, I haven't done anything that makes me want to alter or downgrade or try to simplify any of this work. It's too meaningful. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of hoopla, but when the angels are there, I mean, it's a lot of hoopla. I mean, it's huge. It's a very big life event for me, and to be able to share that with other people. And I'm looking forward to people writing me, hey, I did this, and you know, it's amazing. It's true. I never quite knew it before, but you know, I was talking to Archangel Michael or Gabriel or any one of these, you know, amazing beings, and you know, and they were there, and I got to see them and do this, and I'm looking forward to that, because I mean, I definitely know I'm not the only one. Like, I've had spiritual encounters, and I definitely do think people, you know, scrying is ability. Some people are better at it than others, but for this experiment, I'm very confident that people can replicate this and do this experiment and have these experiences. I mean, they're just incredible, and these beings are magnificent, and it seems that, you know, if it's in somebody's will and determination to do these and to meet and to work with these beings, then they can do it. It's very possible, and doesn't have to be as complex as some of these other grimoires.
while you, as you mentioned, there is certainly work involved, it's nowhere near as arduous and complex as, say, the Key of Solomon or something along those lines. One of the things I wanted to ask you about your book is you make a point several times of talking about going back to the original source, the traditional texts, following them to the letter, at least the first time through the experiment, minimally, and approaching it as one who has that beginner's mind, if you will. And I think that kind of goes along with the attitude you had and you mentioned towards doing the work required, again, you know, following all the steps that the traditional book lays out. And I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about why it's important to follow the traditional text and why you think magicians today seem to be in need of continual reminder about this.
Sure, definitely. My favorite topic. Well, first of all, I think a lot of it stems from a little bit of my schooling through psychology and anthropology, and probably a little bit of sociology as well, because there's a before, during, and after effect that I think about the whole nature of magical ritual and how it works, and then why it works, and then sometimes why it doesn't work. And a lot of it stems from if you have, you know, a lot of research, there's a lot of information about not only magic nowadays, but, you know, cultures, religion, history, and where things came from, which is excellent. But as an example, if you try to conduct these type of magical experiences with a highly, I think, complex frame of reference in mind, it's going to be difficult to achieve tangible and really useful results. Everything begins in the mind. And if you tackle something with, okay, I want to talk to an angel. Okay, I want to talk to Archangel Mikael. Well, I know Mikael comes from, you know, these archetypes and, you know, these beings. He was even the godfather, you know, basic ancients, you know, Sumeria or Babylonia, and, you know, whatever. And, you know, he used this and this, that. So he's not really, you know, the angel. He can be in a god form. I can talk to him like a god form. You've got, I mean, it's great information and it's things that I even know. But it, going at a magical experiment that way, I think, makes it, it's not so difficult on the angels or the spirits end as it is on the human mind. The human mind needs a pretty, you know, kind of clear frame of reference and basically a roadmap, especially when it comes to magical ritual. These things they're very, very intense. They're intense mentally, they're intense psychologically and spiritually. And even when I have these amazing experiences, I mean, immediately after, I'm very much in the mind that this happened, but even everything that I saw and heard, I know I'm not getting the full understanding of what this being is. It's way beyond me. It's in a spiritual dimension or spiritual pattern, frequency of energy that's just not, I can't get the whole of it inside my little head and try to understand it physically. It's not going to happen. So it comes down to, how do I want to understand and do these experiments? Well, if I'm interested in grimoire magic and they're talking about angels and these beings, if I'm going to do that, then it's either I come at it from the book's frame of reference, or that I try to rip that out and just kind of do my own frame of reference and then just hope that works. But unless I have a clear understanding and roadmap and direction of perception of how I can perceive these beings and everything, then it makes it very open-ended. I mean, you might get something dramatic, you might get something different, you might get nothing at all, because it's all dependent on your brain at that time. That's the only thing that you're basing the magic on. And some people account to that. They say that's all they need. That's great. I tried it a few times that way, and even growing up, seeing spirits and having spiritual experiences, it still gets very confusing and overwhelming and not very definable. So starting from that standpoint, the reason that the grimoires, I decided to go from them is that they have a roadmap and basically a whole system of this is how it's going to work. And that doesn't mean that you can't, that you have to put your mind into a medieval Christian frame of reference and you know, be dogmatic or anything. It's nothing about that. But from the anthropological standpoint, there's a certain respect and a certain kind of credence that you give that, yeah, of course they don't know what they didn't know what we know now. And, you know, they have this limited frame of reference. But, you know, I'm accepting that that's the way it was, but these angels appeared anyways. Either that or they're totally lying. And I'm definitely at the point where I'm believing that that a lot of the penners of these grimoires experienced what they were talking about. It was a serious science. So I take that respect and I take it into the ritual and I give it the honor that it deserves. And a lot of these steps and the invocations are structured specifically designed to reach the spirit in a certain way. So that when the angel appears, it's in the reference of what those previous magicians were about, the understanding of the cosmos and religion. When I talk to them, I stay in that respectful standpoint, but it's not like I have to. I've asked them questions outside what would be considered back then, you know, going beyond the bounds of spiritual and religious acceptability. So that's not a problem. But when I have the background of the formula for these grimoire experiments, it creates a structure that I think that my mind especially understands, okay, if I follow these steps and I'm going through this, then I'm putting things in process through symbols, through my unconscious and my conscious intentions, through, you know, various patterns of, you know, how things come together, that, you know, that is making it work. That even the things that I'm making by hand, the tools and everything, that's another thing that I talk about. They're not props. They're not things just assisting me. They have their own and purpose and intentionality for the ritual. They're through making them and putting the intentional, I guess, mechanisms of making them with a certain purpose. It contains within these items the purpose for the ritual, so that each part is vibing at the proper frequency when the ritual is being conducted, that you don't have to consciously, consciously be aware of each of those elements, those tiny elements, all at the same time while you're trying to conduct the ritual. If that makes any sense, I don't know if I'm getting too too technical or too off track, but that's my understanding. Comes at quite a few different viewpoints about why it's important, and you know, these elements coming together is why it is. And in my book, I talk about that as almost like an equation about this is what's going to make the ritual successful. I mean, you can even be a great scryer, but if everything goes out the window, you're not going to achieve the same results, because each part of these instructions and invocations and methods in the grimoires have a purpose. They're there for a reason. And they were also used before, and that we're taking on, you know, the word of the paper, that they were used successfully. So there's already kind of a blueprint there in the quantum field or whatever about the ritual already working. So the energies would be familiar with, you know, working with that type of energy to make the ritual work.
Interesting. Now you mentioned this idea of a religious context and the Judeo-Christian origins of much of this magical tradition, and I think while we may be able to intellectually understand the historical context that these books come from, I don't know that it's really easy or possible for everyone certainly to get into that mindset. And I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the religious and philosophical framework that is most conducive to doing this kind of work.
Sure. And that is a big one. A lot of magicians, just a lot of pagans and such come from a standpoint of, if they didn't grow up with Christianity, then they definitely butted heads with it growing up. And myself, like everyone else, like luckily I didn't have anything too horrific happen to me personally that made me, you know, hate Christianity as a whole. But, you know, myself and my family, we were having a lot of experiences that, you know, some people just thought were evil and then something wrong and, you know, really cautioned about me learning and going off and doing what I did. So I perfectly understand that standpoint. But to be able to conduct, I think, any kind of grimoire magic in the classical periods, you know, really coming from Catholicism, Christian Europe and in the West, there has to be a transcendence past that. And again, I was coming from a point of, my interest was mainly Celtic paganism, and I'd almost, you know, pretty much abandoned Christianity completely and wasn't interested, but the prospect of conjuring and really speaking with these angels and these beings made me move past that. And I think the importance of moving, not so much religion, but really moving into the spirit, is having that spiritual connection, finding it in the best way possible. I honestly don't know if conducting this type of magic or the magic I talk about in my book, Gateways, any of the Solomonic cycle is really achievable unless you've had that blissful presence of the only thing I can talk about is the Holy Spirit. It's unfortunately a phrase that's been overused, and I think the wide community, there really is a connection there that is not dogmatic, that when you're in the midst of it, there's no arguments, there's no questions about dogma, there's no religious undertones. It's just a very, very personal connection to God, to totality, the universe, whatever name that is. And there are names within, you know, of course, the Judeo-Christian, you know, religious context, but I think scans that it is the experience. That's what it is for me. Everything magically is spiritually has to really grasp onto it. It's had to have made a personal impact in my own life. I had to experience it. Otherwise I would have abandoned it. And I think people getting into this, like if they're listening, if they haven't had that connection for themselves yet, then if magic leads them there, or if you find it somehow, it's the best experience in the world, because it's when everything comes together. It's when the magic works. So it's coming from a place of not really knowing if angels exist to, I'm in the presence of them, and this is the most amazing, holy experience. I don't know. I didn't even think I could achieve this. I didn't even think I didn't really feel worthy. I just wanted to see if it was possible, and here it is, you know, and it's incredible, and you can feel the presence there, I think, if you really seek it. So I think once people step back from the dogma and from the, you know, maybe past, you know, religious people, any offenses that may have incurred, and just go past that to the true experience of what that is for them, then, you know, that will lead to possibilities in exploring angel magic, Christian magic, where before there might have been conflicts.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. You have to move beyond that restrictive mindset in order to have experiences that would then essentially prove that restrictive mindset is incorrect.
yes, it's hard, and it's an ego thing, and that's been a huge thing for me in my studies. I've gone through the points where I'm just very, very angry, and I still butt heads with the religious rites and this and, you know, and people. But when I get into my magical space, I gotta let that go. I'm like, that's people. That's on the outside. That's not the world I'm dealing with. I mean, I am dealing with myself and my connection to divinity right now. And that's the only thing that's important right now. When I'm able to let that go and I get in that frame of reference, that's when these experiences happen. That's when I felt my connection to Tritemius, to the magicians before, you know, a solid line with no arguments. And it's been wonderful. And it's not because everybody was believing the same thing, but it's because everybody was seeking essentially the same thing. And those moments of magic of finding it in between is what it's all about. And you go into that and you're like, that other stuff is a waste of time. I don't even bother with it.
Interesting.
Your host is Greg Kaminsky, and this is A Cult of Personality.
Spread my wings.
You mentioned earlier that there were several factors that you considered for success in these magical workings, and I'm just wondering if you might be able to say a few more words about those factors.
Are you speaking about the ones that I mentioned in the back of my book as far as checking them, or the ones in the magical equation?
I believe it's the magical equation.
I tried to make it into an equation, and I worked with a mathematician, and they suggested I just lay it out as kind of bullet points and everything, since math was not my forte, but it seemed like all kinds of working variables that would either make something work or not work. And that's where it was coming from. So as before, and I was a little bit wordy with my explanation about how Grimoire works, or Grimoire magic works before. But, this is where I really broke it down to variables and particular points of how I think it all comes together. Because, like a lot of, I think, magicians before, I've done some experiences I've done some experiments where I was very serious and I was basically expecting to receive results where I didn't. The experiments failed, nothing happened, there wasn't any perceivable results or occurrences to begin with. It was just completely dead. And it was very frustrating, but that's what happened. Even my first goetic experiment, where I had everything down. I had done the 9-day retreat and the fast, especially for the last 3 days. I was doing the Solomonic baths. I had the isolated temple out in the middle of nowhere, and the circle, the lion belt, the robe, everything. And my first evocation was a complete flop. Nothing happened. Nothing appeared. I ended up being very upset and just walking out of the circle without a fear, because I did not sense anything and nothing ever occurred. It was just a complete, basically a magical failure. But since then, I noticed some things that were missing. Even when I had all the physical representations and everything else, so there were some other key elements that were missing when I meditated, when I prayed for, what went wrong, is this possible? Can I make this work? And I was determined. And luckily later I was able to bring things under wrap. But as far as the grimoire is concerned, once you have the name, and this works with any spirit, whether they be manifesting themselves as a known presence or, causing disturbances or making themselves known otherwise, knowing its name is knowing its energy, its representation. So from there we can derive a seal or sigil if we don't have one already. And also if we have a description, if it appears a certain way, that's also an energetic representation of what the spirit's about, its energy, what its purposes. Even spirits that can switch its appearance, it's always going to give something away about what it's about. And having that information is a way to reach the spirit. It's a way to devise symbols and representations the spirit's being that can make that connection. So sigils are very important. The symbols are very important. Just to be able to contact the spirit. The other part is it's times of offices, and definitely in just about all grimoires, you're going to have spirits having its particular time during the day or night, during a particular phase or alignment of the planets. There's going to be things that are corresponding to its nature that way. Which gives more information about how to contact it properly. And especially when we're dealing with the archangels, according to the planets, where through my learning have learned that they are not limited in any way by their planetary associations, but by contacting them and working with them through their planetary hours and intentionally through those associations, it allows them to work with you or cause things and effect by that mode of pattern of energy of frequency. It's like they're like, okay, this is this part of myself that is powerful and I'm connected to, so you know, work through the streamline and this is how we'll get things done. That's one thing I learned through talking with them, is that they were talking about themselves in multifaceted dimensions in area of working and purpose, what they do. The Planetary Associations is a big one, but it's just a particular one that they were given office through that they can help out with. So knowing those is how to contact a being in an appropriate way to connect with them in the desired way to, you know, whether it's just about results or you want to learn more about the information that they're associated with in this particular way, that's why you contact them during these times and hours.
Mm-hmm.
Through moving through these points, the conjurations are set a particular way as well, and that's another reason why I don't make up my own or deviate from them, is that they're connected with this kind of ritual, the paraphernalia, the items that are associated with, everything's working together in a cohesive format, and to start mixing things around and everything takes, it puts too many other variables in the ritual to know if it works or does not work. So I keep the conjurations very specific and also connect to the spirit and the heart of what that means. So when I do the prayers and the blessings, I'm connecting to that energy. This is where I'm reaching to that being through, is through the system. And it's got to be my personal and heartfelt connection through the spiritual power that this ritual is representing, what it's explaining. So that's very important. The conjurations also have the binding ones, especially it's in drawing spirits and crystals, but especially in Galatia. The conjurations are done very precisely, even though they're very religiously worded and can be long-winded. There's phrases in there that are very important about how the spirit is supposed to appear, how it's supposed to relate to you. And these are also important, even in reference to angels. Sometimes it makes the controlled experiment a lot more beneficial than just making it open-ended. Because one thing I've learned, there's so many things in the spiritual world that just do not relate to our physical minds, to our comprehension and understanding, and the mind will either discard information that it does not have a frame of reference or archetype with, it just won't see it, which is a lot of what happens. It's just there's no place for it in the mind or in the comprehension, or the information that comes across, even if there is a presence, is so confusing and unrelatable. It's hard for the magician, the scryer, to take that back and make any real use of it, even under best intentions. You know, I've had these experiences many times where it's just I didn't understand what they were trying to tell me, and then something would happen later, and then it would click, and you know, it was like the pattern unfolding, the situation, like a deja vu, and you know, things would click. But I think people don't quite understand just how dynamic these beings are, and how trying to funnel it down to this human comprehension, even for intelligent people, can be very difficult, because it's just not the same. It's not what we're used to. There is a difference between the physical and non-physical. It works differently. So a formal exchange and meeting is important. I've really come to understand how important this is to keep the meetings formal, to be able to get the most benefit from them. Otherwise, it just gets very chaotic, and it's hard to know what is what. And that's the reason for the ritual contract and the conjurations.
It's fascinating.
But yeah, these are a lot of the points that I go over in this kind of equation. So you know, having these, you know, your will connected to the ritual, the understanding, being able to connect to the actual spiritual concepts that the ritual is about. The divine assistance is something that it sounds cheesy, but it's where I have to throw my ego out, because a lot of things, these things occurred when I didn't think they would occur. I've had encounters where I was not even in the best frame of mind, and I wasn't feeling it, and these things would happen anyways, and I would be filled. I definitely have to give credence for an outside source being assisted, you know, waking up and going through the process of connecting to your divine self is hugely important, because I think it gets the conscious, egotistical, and just kind of rational idealism out of the way, because magic still doesn't coincide with my rationale reasoning and expectation. It just doesn't.
Yeah, I actually believe from my own experience that it is those times when you are uncomfortable and feel like not everything is exactly perfect that you have a better chance of success, and that maybe it is that divine grace or whatever you want to call it, because I feel like when I really don't want to go and light the candle and do the ritual or sit in meditation, that's when I get the results, is when I force myself or something forces me actually to sit down and do the work when I don't want to do it, is that's when things start to happen.
Definitely. So, yeah, and I think a lot of sincere magicians, even ones of different paths, but especially anyone's working with any kind of intelligence or spirit or beings beyond themselves, can attest to that for sure. I mean, there's it's just very difficult as people. I mean, our minds, especially in this day and age, you know, we don't have the chance. Well, most of us don't, to, you know, sit in the monastery or up on the mountain and meditate most of the time. So
yeah, and I think it also shows a real commitment to whatever it may be that you're attempting to contact, that you're there, even if you don't really want to be, and that you could be doing other things that might be more fun or certainly more pleasurable in some respects, but that you're there anyway, you know, attempting to work with them and continually going back. And I think that gets attention.
Definitely. And one thing that when I've been speaking to people about this and we've been asking these questions, is the word that keeps coming back to me is sincerity, true sincerity. The angels and probably spiritual beings in general, when it comes to this kind of working, really, really, really seem to respond and have a measure of respect for sincerity. And sincerity in the way that I'm attempting to do this, I'm trying to contact, and I understand that I might be missing some elements, or like before, my frame of mind is not in the best place, but this is something that I'm sincerely trying to do. I'm trying to make this connection. I'm trying to, you know, learn from you. I'm trying to reach you, and especially while speaking with them and everything. I mean, I am glad that it's part of my personality that with each contact I remember that it's never in a place of ego or assuming that I knew or had any expectations about exactly what they were supposed to do or how to respond to me or what I was supposed to get from them. And that seemed to always make it go much better. It was just every experience, even after I did quite a number of these, every single invocation experience, when I was in the midst of it, it was like it was the first time. I felt very... I guess just genuine. I don't know if young would be, or, you know, naive, but it was I was just in the moment, and I was just experienced what was going on, and it was very genuine with my questions and my responses.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, these magical operations of drawing spirits, essentially angelic spirits, into crystals, for visible manifestation, for audible manifestation, at least for the one doing the scrying or the magician, depending on the situation. And I'm just wondering, you've obviously done this many times, so you're in a better position to address this question. Is it that as human beings, we have a need to anthropomorphize these beings, or do they realize that our minds can only comprehend so much and they appear to us in that form, or is it both or neither? I mean, I'm just kind of curious why this is.
And I've asked that before. You know, this is like, this is what you look like. I think I've asked a few spirits and angels about this. And basically, that's what it comes down to, is that, you know, they don't look like, they don't have to look like anything in their natural state. They are what they are, and it's not attached to any, you know, physical, basically, restraints or ideals. But for people, I mean, you're exactly correct, for people to comprehend and to actually communicate, just our very basic mind has to recognize something that is within our frame of reference. Again, they have to appear as something understandable, something that we can conceive of holding communication with. But a lot of times they will appear in our minds, from my understanding, when I ask them about spirits appearing as, you know, animals or a mix of animals, or sometimes, you know, really bizarre looking. And what their responses were, that their energies, when they come through visually, when people are able to behold them, that what they're seeing is the closest corresponding symbols of what they're about, what, you know, their true natures are. So, you know, as they you know, appear, I guess when I saw Archangel Raphael, and you know, he was, you know, kind of in the clouds, and he was moving, and he had this huge scroll and this, you know, and the staff, and I was asking him all kinds of questions, not only on I was asking about healing, and I was asking things about healing and other things, but also about spirits in general. And he seems to really enjoy talking about communication and spiritual communication and how this works and what the dynamics are about that. And he is just, you know, very big about human beings being these amazing creatures, that their ability to comprehend and put their minds in different things, that so much is going on that they're not even aware of, that's communication with each other, with their surroundings, with spiritual things around them, that there's a lot going on, that their mind's actually working with this information, but it's not, he says it can't be known in the wakeful state, because it's too much information. People wouldn't be able to the mind's not designed to do all this at the same time in the conscious framework, I guess, is that. So what he's saying is that some communication has to remain hidden and subtle underneath, so that, you know, people can go about their daily lives and, you know, this kind of thing. I guess some people, this function is either damaged or off, and some people, I guess, have this, you know, psychic talent or anything, but it's he says that in some people it's a disability, because it makes them crazy. It makes them appear schizophrenic and have these mental, emotional disorders or hearing voices. And it's, he says, this is, everybody is receiving this, but their mind's not able to filter certain things. So it makes their ability to function in day-to-day life very, very difficult. I'm going off on tangents again. So there's just so many things I've learned, but the way that we behold them is basically our minds and a certain ability in our mind to perceive and to decode, to translate the energy of what they're about. And they're able to work with that. They work halfway, like they can choose to appear in certain ways and in certain levels of, I guess, intensity. if you will, and they have a say in that that's completely on their own. And they find a way that that they can communicate and connect with the person's ability to perceive them that way. But I guess there's just so many different levels to not only them and the energy, spiritual energy in particular, but the way that human beings, their minds work when they're scrying, when they're witnessing something spiritual and dynamic that way. It just depends on what they're able to comprehend.
The experience of contacting angels, obviously, you cannot put any kind of price on this experience. But for people who are curious, could you give us a rough estimate of the amount of time and money that you required to get from zero to the point where you could write the book?
That's a good question, and this mystery would probably be better answered by my wife, who was definitely understanding me buying quite a bit of materials, and it is a lot of work, but it's also something that I'm hugely passionate about, and I just, when I get going, everything else kind of takes a back seat to me being able to conduct these experiments, just because they are definitely probably the highlight of my life. These events have just shaped so much and have so much meaning for me that I get that frame of reference of being able to make it work somehow, some way. And that's the way I go about it. But the amount of hours, well, I guess when I began and I decided, okay, I'm going to replicate Tritemius's drawing spirits into crystals, I'm going to do this. I guess from that day or hour when I decided, I was designing and making the tools while learning the ritual. I read it over and over and over again, really trying to get an idea of what it's about, and basically trying to replicate the ritual parts, not the experiences, but the ritual, me going through the motions and seeing what that's going to look like. But I must have been doing that for at least a few months before I could actually conduct my first experiments. And I was working, you know, almost daily when I would get home from work, and any time that I had that was, you know, feasible, and definitely taking advantage, sometimes taking days off of planetary times where I thought it was conducive to make my wand or make the scrying device or this or that. So I was, you know, really using any kind of extra time that I had to make these things. And I would have to look back, but as I'm remembering, it's probably about at least 4 or 5 months before I could actually do my first invocation, my first evocation of drawing spirits into crystals, when I had, because I wouldn't do it until I had everything completed. And that was the one I included in the back of my book, my very first one, which I decided just to share that one for now, invoking Archangel Cassiel. And that was quite a bit of work, of steady work. So probably about 4 or 5 months.
Definitely a lot of time and labor went into this. I think it's clear. Maybe you could just say a few words about the illustrations in the book, because I think that's one of the many things that sets it apart.
Well, the credit goes to he's become a very dear colleague and associate of mine in the Solomonic arts, and that's Asterion Mage, and he is my illustrator. And what happened was, when I was doing this book and trying to get things together, originally I was just taking pictures of all my works. I have pictures of all my work, and I had my wife take some pictures, where before I would take pictures of me doing, you know, my thing is very private and very personal, and I try to keep that to myself. But I, from the get-go, I meant this to be a shared experience. So I was like, I'm going to document everything. I'm going to take pictures of everything I do, because it was my purpose to see if I could do this and share it. So originally the book was just pictures of all my items and implements and even me in the circle. Was contacting Asterion. He agreed to be the illustrator. And I said, great, because I loved his works for a long time. He does fantastic work, and is definitely a great proponent in Solomonic magic to begin with. So when he agreed to this, I was happy. And basically he took the photos, as well as my illustrations of angels that I had done, and he just made them a lot better and book worthy, I guess you could say. And he kind of interpreted, you know, my sketches and drawings and turned them into the illustrations you see in the book.
I get the sense from other people I've spoken to and things I've read that the angels in general are willing and able and ready to help humanity given the right circumstances, I assume. Do you have any sense of how they feel about your book specifically? And the reason I ask is because, again, going back to earlier in the conversation, with your book, you've kind of lowered the entry bar, in my opinion, for people to actually, again, kind of come face to face with these beings.
Right. And from, like, they knew, I can't remember offhand who I was speaking through, where it was mentioned that I was sharing what I was doing. And some things, as far as my experiences, I will not share and publish work, mainly because they're personal on to me, and they're only probably useful to me. But a few other things was information that felt like it was only for myself. Like, I didn't, it was just a sense that I got. I didn't say, hey, can I include this in a book? But they, from my conversations, it's really about that. They do not mind coming to the sincere person, the person who's going to approach them, I guess, in the correct manner, which luckily, whatever I did, I don't know if it was just a ritual the way I went about it or my attitude about it, but they're willing to work with humanity. With some people, and this is actually Raphael again, because it was talking about perceiving them and everything, and they said that some people, well, it's not their time to converse with them, to have the experiences of not only them but other I guess phenomenon. He was talking about other visitations and experiences. It is not their time for that. It's the only really explanation he could give. But I kind of took that as meaning that everybody's kind of on a certain place, whether they want to experience something spiritual or not, that the way their minds are working, or, I don't know, their destiny or how that all fits together, I can't pretend to know everything, but that they either have the capacity for it. Some people will be drawn towards, like, I definitely think that I was. I mean, how things fell into place. Definitely I wanted to. I definitely had a desire to. But I just felt fortunate enough that I've been able to have these experiences. Some people may not, some people are not even drawn to magic, but some people who even are, for whatever reason, it's their mind does not have the capacity for these type of events. Right now, for whatever reason, there could be ways to change that, to improve, or there might be something else. I'm not sure, but that was the sense that I got, is just that, some people are meant to do this kind of work and to have these experiences, and then some people, it's just not their time yet. And I think even to, it's a sliding scale of degree as well. I think that's why some people like D or something, they weren't able to develop it or sense, or they just didn't have the capacity to perceive the angels to the degree that, you know, Kelly could, for instance. It just seems to be something that's within us, but may have an external intelligence at hand for whatever reason, whether we agree with that or not, seems to be this, you know, besides the point. But despite that, there, I think a lot more people with this procedure are able to witness that, because I think even people who may not be able to describe the angels to fullest capacity and may not be able to see them exactly like I have or my scryer has and other people, you can definitely feel it in the room. It fills you, it fills the entire place, and I think you'd have to be really closed off and really maybe in denial to not feel that. I mean, they're there, and there's no question, there's no arguing anything. I mean, it's a wonderful, just an amazing and incredible experience. And I do think that people, a lot of people, if I couldn't say most people, would definitely have the capacity to experience that if they really wanted to. And that's what I love about this, is that they're there, and it's not just my own adventure. This is definitely for other people as well.
Well, that's really encouraging, and I really can't commend you enough for doing what you did and sharing your work with everyone, because it's a great service. Really
is. Thank you.
The methods of grimoire magic that you're using date back to, as you said, Tritemius, Francis Barrett and the Magus, Agrippa. I mean, we're talking, 15th century, roughly?
Yeah, definitely for the, the more, that's almost like the later point, but yeah, the heyday of a lot of this kind of period.
Right.
Ceremonial angel magic, yeah, it's definitely around the 1500s.
And if you read the grimoires and your book and the way the tools, the operations, the invocations and prayers, it sounds like it's right out of the 15th century. And it looks like it's out of the 15th century. And what I'm getting at here is I have the sense, but I have the sense that these methods are kind of timeless. But
yeah.
I'm just curious, because technology, in a sense, seems to advance, but we're talking, I guess, about dealing with a realm of where a human technology is really not the operative factor.
Right. And I find magic is an interesting thing, and I'm not definitely not against, and I can see where technology can definitely assist magic, basically for the transmission of information, if nothing else. But the way that I see it is, especially if we're talking about communication, and that's what evocation is, it's exchange and communication with spirits. As I see technology nowadays, a lot of it is fantastic, and I definitely don't want to go without it, but it is distraction for a lot of us. Televisions, computers, a lot of these things, it's things that we're taking up from our mind. And magic is especially ceremonial magic, in this sense, is really going through the inner world out. If we cannot find that silence and that connection to divinity within ourselves, and I had to really break away from distractions and really find that place inside myself, and like meditation, age old, but the technology is pretty much the same, because humanity in that regard is the same. And I think it touches on that relation of the spirit world and working with non-physical beings. There has to be space in there, and there has to be a discipline, and these, you know, ancient ceremonial magical methods contain those variables. There's discipline. There is a lot of time to really, really bring yourself into a place of, you know, introspection and control and really letting that outside world go. Even for them back then, I mean, there was pleasures and things going on for what they had, their technology, but it's also an absent for that. And when you take that thing away, if you just keep the same magical paraphernalia, it's essentially the same. There's not much that's changed. It's taking yourself out of the day-to-day bustle and patterns and habits and everything that you're used to then, and putting you in a specifically spiritual, magical, religious, if you will, environment, and which is conducive to this type of work. And it just goes back to nothing else. It's not so much that it bothers, you know, the spirits. I mean, some things it does, but the human beings need to be able to reach into those parts of the mind that are able to access this world, and most of technology and distraction is not conducive to that kind of work. And I think that's why that there's not that much change there.
Do you believe or have any sense that the work you're doing, and maybe by extension the work that the gentlemen of Jupiter are involved with, is an extension of the Western esoteric tradition, or is it in some ways maybe a new chapter in that tradition?
Things are really, in my personal work and also through the gentlemen of Jupiter, deciding to do that work and doing it consistently and having my intentions there and connecting on a regular basis to these divine beings, the things have, and I'm still surprised, and it's so funny that I continue, but it's why I give so much credit to outside forces, because I see things coming around, patterns and things improving in my life and people I care about, their lives, and people I haven't met till recently who have found me through the book or other work that they're doing. It's just all these things coming together in just an amazing way that is definitely works just like magic, and it really does, and it always, I'm still pleasantly surprised and sometimes put in awe about just how well this works, and it's humbling. It's not like I'm directing everything that's going on and that's happening. I'm putting my intentions out there, and I'm learning more, and I'm conversing, and I want to get even, I want to go even further than where I've gone, and it just continues to unfold as long as I think my intention and my sincerity is in the right place of what I want and where I'm going with it. And it's just been neat to see, things unfold in the world at large through the other members of the group and people I know who have basically touched on this current and this energy, and just the things that have happened to them. It's just been really remarkable, and it's neat because it's working exactly how it's supposed to, which is beyond even my expectations and comprehensions about what that should look like. It reaches beyond. So I like the fact that it's not just me. It's not just coming from me as neat and powerful as that would see. It's I'm just playing my part in the ongoing matrix, I guess.
Do you have any advice for people listening? I mean, aside from getting your book and actually doing the work, is there any advice that you have for aspiring magicians and in terms of drawing spirits into crystals and angelic invocations?
I do, and the only thing that I can suggest is basically what led me to success, and that is really finding out what, because the more dynamic experiences in grimoire magic, I think, really has to be accomplished through that connection with the divine. It really has to be in that place where you let go of the ego and trying to force things and how things are supposed to look and expectations and worries about failures and really giving that up to something beyond yourself, or at least the quiet, the hidden, silent point of divinity within themselves, because that is a major breakthrough to be able to do this. And then begin by simple scrying, just developing the sight. If you're not used to gazing into crystals, because one thing that I learned, it's not just the experience. I mean, it's a little taxing to be able to stay in that you know, that experience for hours on end, and you lose track of time. There's a lot of energy exchange. It's very, it's wonderful, but it's foreign, because our minds and our bodies are not in that state very often, even for people who practice on a continual basis. And you magicians who do this, they'll notice. I mean, it's a little like, you know, wow. So you have to practice even sitting upright, staring at something for a while. I mean, that takes practice, making sure that, you know, you can be comfortable and not be distracted by, you know, things, and just practice scrying, get a scrying device, and just look at it without expectation. And that takes a lot of patience and a lot of mind control to be able to stare and not try to make things up with your imagination. But how I began is I made a scrying mirror, and I just got curious, and I had the time back in my early 20s to sit and just stare at this thing a lot of evenings and sometimes during the days, and just see what would pop up without trying to force anything or anything else. And I think that's how I was able to do this. I just did it a lot, and you know, at first it was just lights and, you know, wisps moving across, but it captured my interest enough to continue. And as I continued, it was like a skill. It got better. I was able to see things, and things started coming out more, and I was able to make out discernible shapes and this kind of thing. So if people really want to do this work, I think it sounds fantastic, but it'll work for the person who really wants to put forth the effort. So if they're starting from scratch, then you have to be ready to put that practice in.
That's sound advice for sure, so appreciate that. Thank you very much, Frater Ashen. Again, the book is Gateways Through Stone and Circle, published by Nephilim Press. And if you could just remind listeners where they can find you online.
They can find me at the Brian Ashen blogspot. If they just search A Magician's Workings, you'll be able to come to my blog site, which has quite a bit of information and just me going on about my experiments and things that I've created or done and my magical goings on. So that's a great place to come to that. Or they can find me at Facebook at Frater Ashen Jasan. And that's a great place to contact me or find out more about my work.
Excellent. Thank you again for taking time with us this evening. I greatly appreciate it, and looking forward to whatever is coming next.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
In the Occult of Personality membership section, there's an essay for your consideration about the role of tradition in Western esotericism and its relevance to the individual. In addition to this essay, there are over 100 recordings and several research papers available. Just sign up and receive access to everything for one low monthly price. And please remember that A Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by subscriptions to the membership section. Just go to occultofpersonality.net/membership and click the Join Now button. Thank you again for listening. And until next time.